This is KRCU's Going Public. I'm Clayton Hester. President Donald Trump signed an executive order on Tuesday to address concerns raised by national protests about policing. In recent weeks, I'd spoken to Sergeant Joey Han of the Cape Girardeau Police Department about community policing and what has been happening around the country. I spoke with him again about the effect the order will have on his department. So the first thing I wanted to ask you about was, could we talk about kind of the technicals of what the executive order means, locally for police. So at its core, what does the executive order do?
So it's really in reaction to the current climate involving communities and law enforcement and just trying to kind of bridge that gap. So I think they're trying to address really the primary concerns that are brought forth right now. So this executive order is going to kind of reform a few things. Depending on which department you work in or what part of the country you work in, it may be major reformation. And for our agency, it really doesn't affect us a great deal. We seem to be kind of ahead of most of these things already. So for us, it's going to be more minor tweaking than anything else.
We see. So this doesn't mean anything major locally for Cape PD as far as the specifics of locally goes.
No, there's some things that are going to change on a federal level across the board, and that's something that we've already done anyway. And to kind of give you an example of what that would be, I believe Section 3 in the executive order, they discussed the concept of information sharing, and that was the creation of a nationwide database where they track, like, use of force, if an officer has a complaint signed against them for, abusing their authority or using excessive force in any way. So that's things that we do anyway. We always track that. We're real big on transparency and accountability. So that would just be more or less the creation of a database, and then we would contribute our numbers to that as well, which we already do on a federal level, but then this will be something that will be more open to the public so that people can see this and it's not, tucked away behind individual department files.
All right. And so one of the things I know I hear floating around with the topic is that it incentivizes certain things. Is that correct? Or is that kind of the aim of it, to get people on board as far as police departments go through, basically the whatever benefit or incentive it may have?
Sure. So, yeah, there's a bit of a kind of stick and a carrot, if you will, to this, which is, saying that there's some teeth in it. The incentives would be grants. So if you just fail to comply with everything in this executive order, not only can your agency be audited and have some major issues, but you're also not going to be making yourself available for any grants. Now, with grants and law enforcement, that provides federal funds for us to do our job to, our highest efficiency rate. So that's something that everybody's going to want to remain compliant with. They don't want to miss out on any opportunities for grants to better their department or to receive resources because they're failing to meet the requirements involved in this. So there's absolutely some incentives.
One of the other things I know that there's a lot of talk about is the different things as far as police action. And one of those things has been discussed as chokeholds. Nothing was addressed in this as of yet, correct?
Well, there is actually a section involved in this. So the concept of chokehold, it's a very difficult thing, and I'm a self-defense instructor, and I spend it's my hobby. I spend a lot of time in martial arts, and I train our law officers here. In fact, yesterday we had a pretty lengthy training session where we investigated some of the things that have happened on a nationwide scale, ways to avoid situations like that. And the concept of chokehold, it's kind of a flawed term in itself, because a choke is something mechanically that happens to your body if you, choke on a steak. It's not really from an outside source. So strangulation really should be the term. And I know I'm picking apart things here, but I feel like that's important. But the problem is the definition of a choke. There's a lot of restraints. Like if you, overhook, underhook, you have your arms over somebody's shoulders and then underneath their bodies. We were asking people yesterday who aren't in law enforcement to identify what that was. And a lot of people looked at that and said it's a chokehold. Well, it's not. It's a detention technique. There's no restriction of airflow. There's no, you're not affecting the carotid artery. So I understand that we have to, be conscious of the perception that we have if we use restraints. But it's really, it can limit our ability to not use deadly force if we can use hand, open hand techniques to control people. And we're really big on that. We don't want to go to our tool belt and go to the next, you know, escalation of force if possible.
Do you think a benefit to the law enforcement departments to kind of help with different things and to help, or does it create hindrances to what you all do as law enforcement? Is there any drawback for you all?
No. So, you know, it's a great question. I think, you know, with the chokehold issue you just asked, you know, there's a caveat in that as well that says, you know, it's not to be used except in situations where the use of deadly force is allowed by law. So that's in there, but the problem with that is that's open to interpretation at any given time. So, you know, that's the one thing that you can kind of see as a hindrance is, once again, anytime you're taking anything away, it can possibly keep an officer from going home safely to his family. And we got to really slow down and take a look at that. And it's a huge balance, and I struggle with that as an instructor, like I said, to make sure, hey, we want to make sure we do not hurt anybody in the public, especially, you know, we respond to a lot of issues with mental health crisis. You know, we don't want to hurt anybody who's in a crisis who needs help. But to the same token, you know, if it becomes violent, I want to make sure my officers are able to make it home safely as well. So a lot of this is just really getting up to speed, I think, for a lot of departments who aren't already doing these things. Like I said, I felt like when I was reading the executive order, I was checking off boxes saying, yes, we already do that. Yes, we're ahead of the curve. You know, so it was nothing new to us, really. It's really just getting a lot of departments back up to that same page and more or less creating a standard across the nation. You might have asked the question as far as, you know, some great points from this executive order, and I have to look at it objectively, and there are, you know, crisis intervention training, CIT training, that's something we do here. You know, they're trying to mandate that across the board, and I think that's a great thing. They're talking about bringing in co-responder training, which means maybe bringing out counselors, social workers, and things like that to scenes. I think that's a great concept, as long as they also have officers there to keep everyone safe and to keep a violent situation from escalating. I think the idea of having a partnership and, you know, bridging that gap between law enforcement and mental health and medical is a great thing, as long as we work together and we do it in a safe way.
This has been KRCU's Going Public. I'm Clayton Hester.